Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 103. We are discussing the Turkish Airlines Open on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm right. Week off for me. No pressure for me, mate. All the pressure's on you.
Yeah. What's all that about then? Why has the PGA Tour decided to take a breather for no apparent reason?
I'd guess that, you know, they went South Korea, didn't they? They then went to Japan. They then went to China last week. Mm. They started. Was it 3 weeks earlier this year with the what they classify as the wraparound?
Yeah.
And clearly, someone's actually had the sense to say, "Well, can we have a week's break? Because it's not easy getting from China or Japan to Mexico, and
a lot of travelling, I suppose." Makes a level of sense, but yeah. Good. Very rare
for the PGA Tour to have a break.
Yeah, it is. It is. And gives you a chance to recharge the batteries and attack those final 2 weeks, see if you can make it 7 weeks out of seven in profit for your selections.
We'll give it a go. I'm already thinking about the mic over. We might have a little bit of thinking time later in the pod. Right, golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we are available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Paul is available on Twitter at Golf Betting. I'm available at Bamford Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I have already manufactured, produced and released the show for the Turkish Airlines Open. I will place it in the description box of this podcast. This podcast is available on a myriad of different podcast channels. I'm not even going to start listing them out. What I will say, though, is, as I say every week, it would be fantastic if you take the time to log into your Apple Podcasts and rate and review us. It really is our currency. The amount of ratings and reviews you get just really does boost the visibility with Apple Podcasts or iTunes. And that helps then in terms of giving them the ability to put you in various different rankings and ratings so that people can find you. So it's really important to get as many reviews as we can. Now, with that in mind, as I say as well, you leave one, I will always read it out, good or bad. And we have read out bad ones in the past. We had one put last week, Paul, from Ian Lawrence, who is in the United Kingdom like we are. He gave us 5 stars. Ian, we really appreciate your feedback. Thank you. He wrote, "Great podcast. Always look forward to my Tuesday fix." He sounds like a drug addict. "If you're addicted to this podcast, you really have got mental issues." That's a joke. "Very informative and takes all the hard work away trying to figure out what player to back. Keep up the good work, lads." And that is from Ian Lawrence. Thank you, Ian. We appreciate your time and the effort. I saw Lewis Hamilton at the weekend going on about how he appreciates everyone that takes just a little bit of their day to give him feedback on his tweets and Instagram. And he said, even the bad ones, because at the end of the day, they've taken a couple of minutes to take time to give me abuse. And that's fine. I can handle that. It does. You know, people take time to actually give you some feedback. I think you have to just say thank you.
And, yeah, absolutely.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, and thanks, Ian. And you're right. Yeah, it's always nice to get positive and negative stuff. And we go into this stretch now once the Dubai World Championship's done, where we just work on a few things ready for the start of the next season. So if you've got thoughts or ideas or things that you'd like us to talk about or discuss or to include in the website or stats or whatever, then contact us. Twitter, Facebook, comment on one of these pods, whatever, and we can add it all into the mix over the next few weeks while Steve and I work on the plan for 2020 and how we're going to find copious amounts of winners.
Well, that's well worth noting, actually. A Golf Betting System, you know, golf now is 12 months a year. And ridiculously, especially on the European Tour, they'll have the DP World Tour Championship in a fortnight's time. and they will hand over the race to Dubai Tyres. So everyone will go, oh, the European Tour has finished. And then the next week, the new season starts. And, you know, effectively, Paul would never get any time off at all. Any time to, you know, strategize, do all of the kind of hygiene work that you need to do to keep all your databases, everything up to scratch, build new pages for next year on the website. So we effectively take December off, don't we?
Yeah.
In terms of the golf betting website.
Yeah, and rightly or wrongly, but I think it's the right thing to do. Otherwise, we...
go mad.
As you say, you'd never make any progress. And the mad thing is, they go straight into a double header the first week of the new season. So they're playing in the Alfred Dunhill Championship at Leopard Creek, and they're playing the same week in the Hong Kong Open. So not only... not only are they starting the following week after Dubai, but they're starting with two concurrent events as well, which is absolute madness.
That's one thing you say about the PGA Tour. They do take December off. So, yes, Hong Kong Open, a couple of these events down in South Africa, Golf Betting System won't be covering it. There won't be a podcast. There won't be any of our videos or anything. We'll have December off. We will be back the first week of January for the Century, I think it is, Tournament of Champions on the PGA Tour. And then we'll be back each and every week ongoing. So that's that one cleared up. Last week's golf. It was pretty much after the first nine holes on Thursday, you'd been watching Rory if you'd been up at sort of 1 a.m. and you'd been going, oh my God, he's two over.
Yeah.
I think he was two over at one point I saw in the highlights.
A bit like Tiger was three over through three the previous week, wasn't he?
And then all of a sudden you could just see it started to click. Great head-to-head with him and Brooks Koepka light, wasn't it, with Xander?
I'm, in a way, I'm pleased that Rory won because Xander was one of those players that I was umming and ahhing about, and we talked about him in Brit.
Well, surely he'd have been your win-only bet if you hadn't gone with Matsuyama.
Yeah, exactly. And it was only a case of, you know, do you pick the defending champion? And we chatted about it last week, didn't we, as to whether that kind of scenario would be something to turn Xander on. You know, does he want to cross that off his list and become a player who's proven that he can go out and defend a tournament, and particularly one of a stature of a WGC like that. And clearly it did. It clearly enticed him, clearly got him, you know, into a position where I thought he was going to win, actually. I thought he was the one who had the momentum coming into the last few holes and, you know, made his way into the playoff. But those two shots in the playoff for Rory just nailed it, didn't they? And that's what he's all about. When he's striking the ball as well as that, attacking those par fives, outstanding, isn't it? And but great head to head. Yeah, I agree. It was a decent event to watch bits of, at least, with the time difference, which was always tricky with those kind of events, isn't it?
Xander got a little bit too much fade on his drive, then he got an awkward stance, and that was pretty much game over.
So
made the putt for birdie, but this is it. This is what you get with Xander, isn't it? He literally just does peak for events of the very highest grade.
I think what you said last week about if you fancy there's a reason why he'll go well, then you know you're never going to get him at a long backable price. Now he's going to be one of these relatively short prices, you know, even in the majors.
He's a win only bet.
He's a win only bet, yeah, because he, you know, I think last week was. It's got an odd situation where he's actually placed, but that was because he was absolutely going for the win. Generally, if he's sitting in eighth or tenth place going into, you know, the pivotal holes, foot's off the accelerator. He's not one who's going to backdoor a top five or a top seven, I don't think, and get you an each way payout. I think he's, as you said last week, a win only proposition moving forward. So,
what do you make of Matsuyama? Clearly.
Frustrating last week, the way he started.
He shot three over, and then the rest of the tournament, he would have been absolutely neck and neck with McIlroy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's, you know, if you'd have put a decent, it'd have had to be a 65 or something like that first round to really put him in with a chance of winning. But even so, after that first round, he was really strong. He's close, isn't he? There's not much, and as we know, it's extremely fine lines in this game anyway, but. He's not far away at all from hitting top top form. And perhaps that'll coincide with the President's Cup, and perhaps that's where his focus really is. But,
yeah, the tournament where this all could come to a head is Tiger's Challenge in the Bahamas. Because he's playing, I believe. Justin Thomas is playing. It was interesting. I read an interview from Thomas after he'd won the CJ Cup, and they said to him, what kind of mini goals have you got? He said, well, I want to win the Tiger event because it's something I've performed in really badly in the past. And he said, it's an absolutely easy golf course that I should destroy. So, yeah, JT's probably going to be going off what? Well, favourite, I would have thought.
Well, 18-man field as well. It's one of those ones where the odds are horrific, isn't it?
Oh, they are. But that's the kind of thing that Matt Suart... Because John Rahm won it last year, didn't he? After, you know, he was going off at like 8-1 to win the DP World Tour Championship, didn't do it, and then all of a sudden comes out at Tigers tournament at like 7-1 in a 14-man field, and lo and behold, he goes and wins.
Yeah.
So you could see Matt Suart doing that.
Yeah. I think he's got a win in him and a win in him and over the next... Certainly the next few months, if not the next few weeks.
He won't be playing any more PGA Tour golf this year. That's a dead cert. Because you won't find Matsuama in Mexico next week or at the Sea Island RSM Classic. No. That's not going to happen. So you might find he plays somewhere in Japan. Might play the Dunlop Phoenix, which is coming up soon. Might win something internally at 2-1 or something.
It's going to be a horrifically short price, isn't it?
if he
turns up to one of those events. But yeah, he's close. And Hatton was another one who flattered to deceive, wasn't he? The cracking final round to really crucify his price for this week. But again, it just didn't really happen the first 3 days. And then produces a 65 and, you know, his 14th place finish. And when you look at the record books, looks like he's rounding into some form. So... Yeah, frustrating. But I know you got a bit of the action again last week. As I said, that's the fifth consecutive week where you've produced a profit from your selection. So well done.
I'm
cracking effort.
You've got to constantly evolve in this game, haven't you? And I'm just doing different things than I used to do. And lo and behold, all of a sudden you get a bit more consistency on your picks, a bit more confidence around how you're actually selecting. And those opposite field events, the alternative, you know, those alternate events, they are a graveyard. I don't think I've placed for quite a while. I think it was Corrales last year, so I've had about 6 or 7 of them where I've got nowhere near. So it was interesting to have Brian Gay right up in the mix. I think Gay's the sort, clearly 4-time PGA Tour winner, but I just get the feeling that he's got a mental block now when it comes to winning. So he can get in the places, and at 40-1, you'll take the each way payout.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming. Definitely. Especially when you had some players beneath him in the market that were crazily short in price. But I just don't think he's got enough to actually win a tournament. There's always someone, either one of these younger guys that wins their first event, or in this, I mean, Brendan Todd, where did that final round come from?
Oh, man.
Outstanding.
Birdie Barrage, wasn't it? There was a little bit with Todd, wasn't there? I mean, he finished second one of those Corn Ferry events back in
August. The one they play on the very classical Ohio State golf course. That's got very good winners and sort of top players come to the...
Nationwide Children's, I think it was, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So finished second there. So there's a little bit of flash of form. And then 28th. Last time out.
Forget the miscut. And then at Houston, 28th. Yeah, and that's where, right. Yeah, there was something there, wasn't it? Two decent rounds.
Yeah, I flicked back through, because it was a decent price as well, 100-1, I think, in spots. I'd flicked back through his form over the last few years just to get a feel as to what he'd been doing. And it was, there's nothing there, is there? There's, you know, other than what we've just talked about, the rest of it is...
through a lot of trials and tribulations, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was 2013. Don't shoot me if I'm wrong. It was 2012, 2013. He hit the tour, didn't he? And he won. And he had one of those hot periods where every week Brendan Todd was in the top five and fifth here, sixth there, and everyone's going, this guy's a good player.
Yeah.
And then slowly that kind of... disappeared, and then he went through a terrible period where he had the yips, apparently couldn't hit the ball, didn't know what he was doing with his swing, couldn't place on the Corn Ferry. Slowly but surely he's found some confidence. If you look at those two tournaments last week, HSBC was a bombers, GIR, ball striking, paradise, yeah. wasn't it, in the end?
Yeah.
Big hitters, you know, and that's kind of where that Shazam course seems to have, that's where it's settled now.
Yeah.
I'll say that, and next year's short hitter will win it. Like
just chip the chip and putt.
I think Bermuda was completely the opposite. It was a short golf course where actually the shorter hitters, like a Brendan Todd, meant nothing.
Mm.
Did not, because as we said, there was two par fives which were effectively long par fours, so everyone's going in there and can reach. And it actually became a pure short game putting contest.
Mm.
So, you know, we can take that forward for next year. We've got a bit more information about the golf course. We know that 22 under, 25 under is attainable.
And this,
so to
this
actually
Bermuda,
get a full place out of that at 40-1, I was more than happy.
Yeah, I know, it's good. This Bermuda Championship is a fixture for the next few years.
Then, oh, yeah. I mean, the field was shocking. We know that. I think the PGA Tour do need to do something with the rulings, because, you know, there was a lot of stuff on Twitter about players of the ilk of, you know, decent Corn Ferry players, someone like a Roberto Diaz that had been contending on PGA Tour fairly recently and was an alternate. And some of the players that were in that field, well, you know, they hadn't played on the main tour for years.
No.
So there's something about the fact that they prioritise past winner status over and above any other sort of lower status that needs to be looked at for these opposite field events. Because it devalues the PGA Tour product.
Yeah. If there's young and capable people on these kind of secondary and tertiary tours, you should be...
Guys that couldn't keep their card last year, but you're actually putting Gary Nicklaus in the field or Ted Purdy. That's all wrong, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And you've got guys like Omar, your old mate Omar. A lot of these guys are actually saying, no, I can't, I'm not playing. And they were actually turning down the invite to play.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that. But they've signed, I think it's a 5-year agreement for that Bermuda Championship. So it's not going away.
No, okay. It's good, as you say. It's nice when you've got a course and an event where there is something to grab onto in terms of it being, you know, there's some characteristics to it which can lead you down quite a defined path. And as you say, short hitters, good putters. I mean, as you said, the birdies. What do you get? 7 on the trot, I think, Todd, on the front nine.
Oh, it's crazy. And that's the thing, you know, at these kind of mid-levels of golf, like a lot of the European Tour events that you deal with and these lower events on the PGA Tour, it's always a case of, or often the case of, you've got a lot of guys near the lead who are just effectively passing the wind to each other, and eventually it falls in someone's lap. It was good to see Brendan Todd say, nah, you're right, lads, I'll take this.
Yeah,
and he was like, 7 shots clear.
Yeah,
I'll take this win.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
It was nice of Brian, actually, to shoot a very good number on the harder 9, because I thought it was going to be one of those nightmare scenarios, even though I was out at a family party, so I wasn't actually tracking any of this. And when I got back at about 8 o'clock, Brian Gay was T2nd. I thought, well, that's fantastic. I didn't realise that he'd gone as low as, like, T11.
Yeah, it dipped out of the places after a few bogeys, and then
It was a few of those. Oh, good God, I can't win an event! And then he eventually got his head around that he wasn't going to win and started playing well again.
Yeah, you look at the leaderboard and realise that Todd's now 10 shots ahead of you, and you can get back to your game. And
deep breath. Well. Oh yeah, I can start playing properly.
Yeah, and here, made 4 on the trot.
Birdie. Okay, but how many times have you got players that just collapse in the final round and bring you? It's just nice to wake up on a Sunday, I find, with a chance of someone actually winning a tournament.
Yeah.
That's all you want, isn't it? And that's what players say. All I want is a chance on Sunday to win, and that's what they aim for. It's the same with the betting, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Put yourself in a position to get a result, and Sunday, come what may, see what happens.
Now, great segue, Paul. You're talking about an event where you can get a handle on things and they play it for a same course for a number of years. We've actually got with this Turkish Airlines Open this year, they're going back to a course that they played between 2013 and 2015, I believe.
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
So you've actually got something to work with this year.
Yeah.
In terms of this golf course and
don't
just
always
the kind
get
of players that you've been looking for this week. It's a good event, isn't it? Before we start, can you just talk listeners through where we're at with this race to Dubai scenario now, because we've now got Rory McIlroy in the mix as well, I believe, after last week.
Well, we have, yeah. I mean, if you look at the top 10, Bernd Wiesberger's still the leader. I mean, I backed him last week, and it was pretty much a no-show, wasn't it? It just didn't do anything for the 4 days.
Yeah.
But he's still got a healthy lead over John Rahm. Rahm's not playing this week, and he's not in the list to play next week, so the only event that he will play will be the Earth Course.
Right, okay.
And if Wiesberger gets himself a couple of decent results this week and next, he could be home and dry. He could be clear of...
insurmountable, yeah?
Mathematically, I can't see why or who could catch him if he were to have two outstanding weeks. I mean, that's clearly got to be the target for him. Shane Lowry plays this week. Shane Lowry doesn't play next week. So,
who's fourth?
Fitzpatrick's fourth. Fitzpatrick doesn't play this week. I mean, he's playing next, but again, he's decided not to play. McIlroy has moved himself up to fifth spot. Doesn't play this week. Doesn't play next week. Again, he'll be at the Earth Course, assuming he's going to turn up to the Earth Course, and he could be too far behind.
So what we're saying is Rory, back in fifth, would need to win, of course, a DP World Tour Championship, and he'll be going off at something like 3-1, 4-1. And he would have to have all of the other players above him effectively nowhere near the lead to win that race to Dubai.
Again, it depends. You'd have to work out the ins and outs, the actual mathematics of it, but I suspect by the time we get to that point that Rory will be too far behind.
So Wiesberger's got a bit of an open goal over the next 2 weeks.
Yes, he's got a massive, massive opportunity to take this forward and make it his own. So, you know, whether that exerts another level of pressure on him, we shall see. You know,
clearly, or a win this week for Shane Lowry would really make it very, very interesting.
Yeah, it would. If Lowry were to win or second or third, and Wiesberger were to finish pretty much where he did last week, then that would open things right up.
Okay,
and you go a bit further down from there. I don't think these guys are. You know, Matt Wallace would probably need to. He's in sixth. Wallace would probably need to go win to get himself in with a chance. Fleetwood's not playing this week. Oosthuizen's not playing this week. They're both playing next, but they're both not around this week. And then you look down to the likes of Bobby McIntyre. I mean, from McIntyre to be in ninth spot in this race to Dubai without having won this season, that just shows you how consistent and how strong he has been.
Oh yeah, in this year.
Very, very good. And Van Rooyen in 10th. So these guys, McIntyre, Van Rooyen would need to go win-win, I think, to get themselves in with a chance of...
I doubt if it's even on their radar.
No, exactly. So I think it's all in Bernd Wiesberger's hands by the looks of it. And should he go and... Because he's playing it next week as well. Should he go and have two strong weeks, then I think that's he'll be pretty much home and hosed. But we shall see.
So we've got three Rolex Series events now till the close, this being the first of them. The field itself seems a reasonable standard. Rose at the Rose heading out 8-1, going for a three-peat, even though it's worth noting that his two previous victories were on a different golf course. You've got the American Raider Patrick Reed at 11s. Then you've got Shane Lowry at 16s. Tyrrell, who, as you said, has crucified his price into a best of 18-1.
It's a real
Matt
shame.
Wallace,
I could have quite
Matt
fancied
Wallace
him.
At 20s. Frankie and Bernd Wiesberger at 22-1. Matthias Schwab and Robert McIntyre at 28-1. Also there with Hao Tong Lee. And then we're down to the likes of Danny Willett at 30-1. Alex Noren at 33s. EVR at 33s. Christian Bezuidenhout at 40s. With Victor Perez, Eddie Pepperell, Thomas Peters. And then Kira Deck, Joost Louten, Martin Keimer. It's a decent event. There's some strong talent in it, undoubtedly.
Yeah, I for a Rolex Series event, it's kind of where you'd expect it to be, I guess. And I think it speaks volumes that some of these guys who have got a strong and mathematical chance of winning the race to Dubai aren't playing this week, or some of them playing this and not next, or not next and this or whatever. But yeah, we are where we are. But as you say, at the very top, Rose going for his hat trick of events is going to be a popular boy this week, I think. It's just a case of whether, I mean, I've watched a bit of Rose over the last few weeks, and his irons, you know, he, ball striking wise with Justin Rose, you expect his irons to be absolutely outstanding, but for me, they've just not quite been there for quite some time now. Which
since he switched to Honma, his tee to green game is nowhere near where it used to be, is it?
No, it's
absolutely nowhere near.
And the mad thing is, he's been putting very, very well. His short game's been really strong, and he's been putting really well for Justin Rose. But you know, if he'd have coupled that stretch where he's been putting well with some decent iron play, then he'd have won all sorts of tournaments. But it's just not quite been there. So, yeah, I've swerved Rose. I'll go into my picks a little bit later when we've gone through the course. But he's a tough one to go with this week on the strength of his irons. I mean, the fact as well that he's going for this hat trick or three-peat, as it will be described, I'm sure, and he'll be joining a very exclusive club should he win three consecutive Turkish Airlines Opens this week. But clearly,
best
that's
price,
where the
best price
8-1
isn't really turning you on, is it, for Justin Rose at the moment?
No.
I wanted to highlight, Paul, before we crack on. We were contacted last week by William Hill, basically saying that they have a very strong new customer offer available. Mm-hmm. And we were like, wow, this is extremely strong. It's their best ever sign-up offer. And, you know, we've been in the industry 10 years. We've never seen William Hill with such a strong new customer offer.
No, it's just
interesting this week at Turkey, on the basis that they are market-leading price on a host of players this week. Shane Lowry, Matt Wallace, Francesco Molinari, Bernd Wiesberger, Matthias Swab, McIntyre that we've mentioned, Eddie Pepperell. One of your selections is also... He's also out of best price with them. So it's not as if there's no reason to actually have an account with them this week, because they are outstanding on odds this week at the Turkish Airlines Open. But this new customer offer, which is available at Golf Betting System website, of course, there's a link in the description box through to GB, through to Golf Betting System. They're offering a 100% free matched bet. Now, their standard offer has always been bet 10, get 13 free bets. But this offer is 100% free match bet, and this is the great bit, up to £100 or €100 if you're in the Republic of Ireland. Outrageously strong.
And it's only running until the 14th of November, so you've got a little over a week for that particular deal. So if you're interested in using it for the golf, then this week or next, and then that'll be a lot. They split it into four equal sized free bets. So if you do the full £100 or €100, then you'll get four 25 or 20, 25 euro, 25 pound free bets.
Which last for 30 days, which is generous. So yeah, 100% free match bet with William Hill, up to £100 or €100 for you in the Republic of Ireland. It's a superb offer. Key terms, of course, and T's and C's available at Golf Betting System. But I thought it was worth highlighting that, Paul, because that, with William Hill, as you said, available until middle of November. So you've got to be quick. And that is their record-beating new customer sign-up in their history.
Very, very strong, as you're saying. Well worth a look if you haven't got a William Hill account already. So, good spot, Steve, good spot.
Where are we heading then, Paul? Where are we heading this week? Yeah,
The Montgomery Max Royal, as you said, it hosted the events for the first three times of this particular Turkish Airlines Open, when it was hosted between 2013 and 2015. 78-man field, no cut, so you won't lose your players after two poor rounds on Thursday, Friday, although they may be nowhere near actually getting into the mix by that point if they've had a bad start. But yeah, back to the Montgomery Max. It's the first three events were won by Victor Dubuisson in 2013, Brooks Koepka in 2014, and then Dubuisson won again in 2015. So clearly Victor liked what he saw. They're his only two European Tour wins. In fact, his only two professional wins that he's achieved, both on this track back in the day. So looking through Victor's history and where he's played other decent tracks is not a bad starting point this week, actually, to see what it is that might correlate well with him as a player and this particular track. It's a 7,133-yard par 72. It's a resort course. It's got flood-lit fairways on some of the holes as well. It attracts players from all over the world to come and play. So it is one of those kind of holiday destinations for avid golfers. And I know a number of the members on our Facebook group have played it as well over the last few years. So it's clearly popular. Resort track, bent grass greens. You need to bring a putter with you because you need to get somewhere in the region of 20 under. The three winning scores here have been 24 under, 17 under and 22 under the last time that Dubuisson won in 2015. Now, the main reason for that, the main reason the scoring gets so low is there are five par fives and five attackable par fives here. 72 setups, so there's par five par fives, also five par threes, so slightly different to a standard setup. Just going back to Victor, the last time he played, 2015, he was 16 under par for the par fives over the course of the week. So you've got to absolutely annihilate these par fives to stand a chance of winning or compiling a competitive score here this week. There's pine trees, water in play, but really it's relatively wide. It's a second shot course for me. And as I say, the key aspects, I think, are going to be finding your way to make a score on these par fives. Just to give you an idea of the winning odds of the players that have won this particular event so far. So going back to the first three that were held here, Dubuisson won 80-1 in 2013. Kepka won his first European Tour event in 2014 at 33-1 after a spell of decent form. You're not getting 33-1 anymore about Kepka, that's for sure.
But it's interesting that 2013 and 2014 results, they were basically Tour maidens. Both
were,
winners.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, that's an angle I'm taking with a selection. But both mine.
Certainly something to grab onto there. Yeah. Dubuisson won again in 2015, 45-1. Torbjørn Olsen won in 2016 when they moved to a different track. Then the last two events have been won by Justin Rose at 8-1, and then Rose defended last year at a paltry 9-2. So those are the last three that have been held elsewhere. And, of course, we're back now to the track that hosted the first three. So well worth bearing in mind if you're looking at the event stats on the site for this particular week. Greens and regulations tended to be the key stat here. 2015, it was a little bit firmer, so the greens were more difficult to hold. But even so, the scoring was still deep. It was still 22 under. I don't think it'll be quite as firm this week. We had rain over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, rain. It rained yesterday. It rained yesterday. There's a bit of drizzle around this morning, Tuesday morning. And then from there on in, the forecast looks set fair. It looks like it's going to brighten up. The temperature's going to be up to around about 80 degrees Fahrenheit in the afternoons. So it's going to be calm, sunny, beautiful golfing weather. And when you've got a lush, or relatively lush, course underfoot from that recent rain, I suspect the scoring is going to be just as deep as we've seen it over the last few years.
And just looking at your statistics here, you said 2015 was quite firm and the GIR numbers collapsed, but you look at 2013, now Victor Dubuisson was fifth for greens in regulation at 86%. So you could be seeing a scenario this year where the top quality ball strikers are hitting 90% of greens in regulation.
Yeah, quite possible.
That's
quite
madness. Possible. So it's not a difficult golf course, is it?
No, it isn't. It's going to be about strokes gained on approach. I think you're going to need to be getting yourself into good scorable position. Yeah. You don't want to be making 30 footers to make your birdie every time. You've got to be attacking those pins. But the pins should be wholly attackable this week. So, you're going to have to have your shooting boots, your scoring boots on this week, I think, to get yourself into the upper echelons of the leaderboard come Sunday afternoon. Just looking at the incoming form of the winners in this particular track, Dubuisson and Koepka both had at least a top four finish in their last three starts for the first two events. Victor's form was a bit patchier the second time round, so they're the three that have won here. Only going back to Olsen, he'd missed eight cuts out of 11 starts when he won in 2015 on a different track. Justin Rose, the last two years, your granny could have picked him really from the form because he was absolutely tearing trees up before he arrived here. But you clearly had to take a huge compromise on the price if you'd have gone for Rose the last 2 years. But he's obliged both times. I don't think he's in quite the same nick this year, and 8-1 is the same kind of price he won at a couple of years back. So. Each for their own, I guess. I mean, for me, it's a second shot course. You need to maximise greens. You need to have strong strokes gained on approach. And your par five scoring needs to be very strong. I mean, I've looked at players who have been scoring well on the par fives recently. I've also looked at those who've been, got a more general longer term trend with par five scoring as well. And I think either way, you're going to need to be able to confidently attack the par fives here. To really get yourself into a position to contend, I think it's going to be the crux of it, from what I can see. And for me, I've narrowed it down to four this week, and I've been let down by a couple of these shorter prices over the last few weeks. I don't tend to like to back the shorter prices, but I've kind of been reeled in by the likes of Matt Wallace and then Hideki last week, and both of them flattered to deceive, finishing just outside the places, which was no good, seeing as I backed them both win only anyway. But they're both being in a position where they could have contended had they strung four decent days together. But alas, they didn't. So I've kind of veered away from that a little bit. And Rose, we've talked about. I can't go near him at that price, given the way that his the irons have been played. The one that I came closest to at the top end of the market was Tyrrell Hatton, who I backed last week, and that flying finish of 65. Has clearly put him on the radar for the bookies and for the punters alike. But 18-1 and being backed in quite heavily. He's been tipped up as well from what I've seen. I just couldn't quite pull the trigger with him this week, I must say, at the top of the market. So do you think at the top of the market, Steve, was really one vaguely interesting for you?
If you'd have asked me a question, first thing when the one that My first reaction would be win only on Patrick Reed. And then I look at Patrick Reed and I look at the way he wins and I look at the form that he wins off. He doesn't tend to win off top 10.
No.
He actually tends to win off, and he did exactly the same this year. I think he was fifth in Detroit. I then tipped him up the week after at Wyndham, or the outing after at the Wyndham. He finished like 40th. And then he won the outing after when I didn't tip him up.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with Reed. I think he tends to win off of something that's not overly substantial inbound from a result perspective. I could actually see Reed stepping up and winning the DP World Tour Championship at a better price.
Yeah.
Probably coming off something pretty average this week. I would have thought he's there for one reason and one reason only, a big fat check.
Yeah.
Because I would have thought Justin Rose and Patrick Reed are getting rather a lot of revenue coming into their bank accounts from Turkish Airlines, who aren't shy when it comes to sponsoring top-level sport, their links with Barcelona or whatever. But no, not, Hatton would have been half-tempting, but I don't like the price at all. I think Matt Wallace has got some serious issues. Francesco Molinari, his tee-to-green game has gone away completely, which is his strength. And I'm not sure about Burn at the moment because, as we were discussing at the top end, he's under a bit of pressure now, isn't he? He's raced a Dubai leader and he's got a big opportunity this week. And he probably knows in the dark recesses of his mind that if he finished in the, say, top 10, top 12 the next 2 weeks, he's in a very nice situation unless somebody does something out of complete craziness and he finishes last at the DP World Tour Championship.
It'll be fascinating. Maybe, to see maybe, how it
we saw Tommy Fleetwood a few years ago kind of not win the race to Dubai with huge form. It was just kind of 11th place here and 12th place there. He'd done all the winning earlier on in the year.
Yeah.
So in answer to your question, no.
I think I kind of came to the same conclusion, and you know, had I gone with one, it would have been Tyrrell. But as I say, having been burnt over the last couple of weeks with a couple of relatively short prices, I've veered away. So that's probably the fatal mistake of this week. If you fancy a bit of Tyrrell Hatton, probably time to lump on. But I've started a little bit further down. I've got a couple of mid-price players. Firstly, Victor Perez, who won the Dunhill Links a few weeks back to break his maiden on the European Tour. And perhaps there's this link to the Dunhill Links, actually, if you look through both Koepka and Dubuisson. Both of them have got top 10 finishes at the Dunhill Links. In fact, they've got 5 top 10s from 11 combined starts between them. So perhaps there's a nice little form link between the two events there. I mean, Perez won at St Andrews and still looks hungry. I mean, there was this whole backstory with him at St Andrews, wasn't there? And from what I can see, there's not the same kind of story here this week. But unless something comes out of the woodwork over the next few days, we shall see. But he still looks hungry. 16th at the Golf National at the French Open, 4th last week at Shoshan at the WGC on his WGC debut. That really did catch the eye. He opened with 65. He closed with 66. Critically for me, he led the field for par 5 scoring last week, which, as I've said, I think is going to be a really important aspect to this particular week. A decent driver, 300-yard driver, 13th for strokes gained approach for the season to date, and that fits very, very nicely for me. 58th in the world now after last week's effort, and that's an outstanding effort for a rookie. You know, he could get into the top 50 by the end of the year with one more decent week between now and the end of Dubai in a couple of weeks' time, and that would be a huge return for a player in his rookie season. And that also puts him, the win itself at the Dunhill Links puts him in the outside frame for the Henry Cotton Rookie of the Year award. But should he win this week, next week, or in Dubai, then Guido and Kurt Kitayama are the two that really are looking to win that particular accolade. Are going to find there's a third name on the list, and that will make that decision a very, very interesting one as well, I think. So be interesting to see how motivated he is for that kind of thing. But I think, 58th in the world has got to be a massive motivation for him. And, coming off the form from last week, I thought 45-1 was well worth taking the chance on with Victor Perez to become the third victor to be victorious at the Montgomery Max from 4 stars. We shall see, eh? Secondly, Kiradek Afibarnrat, same price, 45-1. Now, if we talk about the Dunhill Links as potentially containing a link to this particular track, listen to this list of names: Justin Rose, Ian Poulter, Henrik Stenson, Andy Sullivan, Danny Willett, Rory McIlroy. All of those players were in the contention or semi-contention for the 3 events that were played here between 2013 and 2015. All of those names I've just mentioned have either won or have finished second at the Earth Course over the years. Very, very strong link there. I mean, you could argue that it's a kind of almost self-fulfilling prophecy, because those same players are going to be playing a lot of those same events as this season's come to a close. But it appears to me there's a little bit more in it than that. Even Dubuisson has finished 3 times in the top 4 at the Earth Course over the years, and clearly he's won twice on this particular track. So I did have a good look through at form of the players in this week's field versus how they've performed over the Earth Course over the years. And one of those really did stick out to me, and that is Afibarnrat, who's finished 2nd and 9th the last 2 times that he's played on the at the Earth Course. And he's got a little bit of form here, but a sneaky form here as well. Finished 3rd here back in 2015, where he putted particularly well. And it's not been a great year for the tie. He started as a PGA Tour member, you'll remember, at the start of the year. 3rd in Mexico, 5th at the Byron Nelson, but not a great deal since, really, until he got to the CJ Cup a few weeks back and finished 8th behind Justin Thomas in a decent field. Slipped out of the world top 50 now, so really needs to start to get his finger out if he's going to be back in by the end of the year. But that 8th, that's a good positive sign for him. and fourth for ball striking that week, decent on the par five. So there's lots of positives to have drawn from that.
Sneaky that CJ Barner, Cup. He's the one. He's one that's going to start to trend because he has to. I think, you know, if he wants that, he wants that invite, dropping in on his Thai mansion doormat.
Yeah.
Before Christmas, he needs to get top 50, and we've seen it so many times. All of a sudden, and we've seen it with Tyrrell Hatton. It's coming because it has to happen. Otherwise, you know, there's a lot of pain early on next season, next year, and a lot of worry about getting into the Masters. So yeah, I can see Kira Deck. Seems to be his kind of winning target as well. He really does like a birdie fest, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. And when he's playing well, then you often see him in this kind of 86% greens regulation number. It's the kind how I'd associate him with a strong week. And he's a great putter when he's playing well as well. So the fact that he's also finished third here, and he did putt well that particular week as well, as I just mentioned, then I think there's lots to like about him.
Did he play last week in Shanghai?
No, I've got the CJ Cup as his last start.
Oh, I think that's a real advantage this week, and you know, what you're talking about. Well, listen to this. I looked at the three winners of this in that 2013-2015 period.
Mm.
If you look at Victor Dubuisson in 2013... he had played the BMW Masters in China a fortnight before, and he'd had one appearance in the month leading up to this Turkish Airlines Open. So quite lightly rested, yeah?
Yeah.
Brooks Koepka, he'd had one appearance in the month and the build-up, which again happened to be at that point the BMW Masters. He'd finished 48th. Dubuisson had finished 44th, so no great. But if you look either side of that, they'd actually... as you said, they had, I think Koepka had finished in the top five or six on the PGA Tour a couple of times.
Yeah,
Dubuisson had some nice results building into that. Dubuisson, the last time he won, had played in Hong Kong the week before, finished 32nd. But he'd actually had 3 weeks prior with no golf. So lightly rested, I think, is an angle here.
Yeah.
And you look at these players. I mean, I was pretty sweet on Kurt Kitayama. And then you just look at the guy. He's played something like 5 or 6 weeks straight.
Yeah.
And he's played in Europe. He's played in America. He's played in Asia. And that's got to be taking its toll by now.
Particularly at this point in the season, the fatigue factor can really start to...
Yeah. To absolutely. Absolutely.
Not just the physical game, but the mental game as well. Just getting yourself up for, you know, contending, competing week in, week out can... it can burn some players out, I think, at this point in the season. So, it's a nice little angle there. I do think that could be an element for this particular week as well.
Then you look at Dubuisson and Koepka, 13 and 14. Both hadn't won on the PGA, on the European Tour. They hadn't had a main tour victory between the two of them.
Mm.
Even though Koepka, the year that he won in 2014, had finished in the top four at the US Open that year.
Yeah.
And it just pushed me in one direction. It pushed me to Robert McIntyre, who I just... You mentioned it earlier in the pod. And you've mentioned it in your commentary in the preview, which, of course, everyone can link to or read via the description box. But his form this year is outstanding. Second at the British Masters, second at the Made in Denmark, sixth at the Open Championship. So he's had a top six in a major this year. Second at the Porsche European Open. Fourth at the Italian Open. And then he had a week off after the Italian Open. He had a week off after, or 2 weeks off after the Italian Open. Went out to the HSBC last week. His first WGC. Finished top 20. Brilliant. Yeah, not as good as Victor Perez, I grant you that, or Matthias Schwab, granted. But actually, rounds in there, 69 in round two, a closing 67 in round four, very nice close. Arrives here, pretty lightly rested. And I just think the course is going to suit him. Aggressive off the tee, and his strength of his game is his strokes gained approach.
Mm.
Third for that in the Czech Masters. Ninth for that at the European Open. First for strokes gained approach at Wentworth. He was also eighth for strokes gained approach last week in Shanghai. I think 28-1. I think it was the price that put you off. I've actually backed him on Betfair Exchange at 35s. Robert McIntyre. I think he's due a win this season. And at an event where two of the three winners are on a course where... And that's the kind of thing I thought you might find here, that a really top grade Tour maiden actually comes along and steals this.
Yeah, and he's one of the most eligible in that respect, isn't he? Everyone can see that he's
at that price point, just looking at the way that the tournament has been in the previous renewals here, the form in, I would take him personally over someone like Hao Tong Li or Danny Willett, who I think Willett, again, I had a good look at Willett, but you just look at his career, when he gets a big victory, doesn't tend to back that up with anything win-wise for a few months afterwards.
No.
So that put me off Willett. So yeah, Robert McIntyre, that's the one towards the top of the betting that I've personally plumped on.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree. And he's, I'm just staring at my analysis while you were talking here. And the only thing that did put me off was the price. I mean, yeah. I've marked here that my target price was 40-1, so he's not hit that. But it's difficult to argue against what you said. And the other aspect, which is really positive with him, is that relative to the players in his field, he was second for par 5 scoring last week at the WGC.
Was he?
Beaten only by Victor Perez, who I put up. But Perez was 11 under for the par 5s. McIntyre was 9 under. And then everyone else in this field.
As we watched it last week, that must mean that he's hitting the ball quite accurately off the tee and finding lots of fairways to then be able to go in two for those holes over in Shazam.
Absolutely. So your long irons or your 3-woods and 5-woods, when you're in position to use them, are also performing particularly well to put yourself in position to get up and around these par 5 greens. And that is going to be absolutely critical this week. So, yeah, I can't fault or dip, put a negative spin on McIntyre at all. It was purely the price. But if you fancy a bit of 28, so as Steve said, there's a little bit more available on the exchange if you... fancy.
Yeah, I'm on the exchange at 35s because, as you said, actually the 28, I think the bookmakers are very wary of McIntyre. So I've just gone on the exchange and hopefully he gets off to a start, and then you can take a view on your position on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I know that you've gone for two more at triple digits, which will get the listeners intently listening, especially after you had a decent score at 125-1 the other week with Walters in Portugal. Mm.
Indeed.
Who are the two that you've plumped for this week at triple digits?
So, the first of the two is Guido Migliozzi, the talented Italian who is still being underrated in my view. Yeah. I mean, I looked at this and the kind of player that I think would go well, an Adrian Aus kind of player could go particularly well this week. But you look at Aus, he's around about 45-50-1. Guido, who's won twice already this year on tour, is twice the price. Yeah. I picked him up at 110-1 yesterday. And he's been nibbled in a little bit. There's still lots of 100-1 around about.
Yeah.
And as I say, he's won twice this season. He's got three more Alps Tour wins. He's only 22, the lad. And he's won 5 times on his combined tours. And he knows how to get the job done. And what you find with these young, inexperienced players is they can be inconsistent. And if you look at his results, they are inconsistent. There's miscuts interspersed with these wins and some better finishes. But generally, he's relatively disadvantaged when he's coming to these courses because players will have, racked up 6, 8, 10, 15 years' worth of history behind him. But given that they've only played this 3 times here at the Montgomery Max and it's not been played for the last 3 years, I think there's less disadvantage for a player like him this week than there has been. And again, if you look at the places where he's performed well when he's seen him for the first time over the last few weeks, 7th at the Porsche European Open, 14th at the Portugal Masters, both of those are tracks that appeal to a player who is going to be more aggressive and more willing to go for these longer holes. And I think that he can use that aggression this week and really attack this particular course. And his last start was at Portugal, and that was his best iron performance for 3 months. He was 2nd for the par 5s that week, 9th for strokes gained approach for the season. All of those stats are exactly the kind of thing that I'm looking for this week, and 100-1 that you can still get about Guido this week, I think is well worth taking on. And finally, I've gone for the Japanese sensation Masahiro Kawamura, who's bizarrely the same price this week as he was last week, 175-1. Yet he finished 22nd last week at WGC level. Decent performance over the weekend. He shot 66-69 over the weekend, which combined is a combined score exactly the same as the eventual winner of Rory McIlroy. Yet he's still 175-1, the same price as he was the previous week. I couldn't quite fathom that, so I've just snaffled that up. And he's only got one career win to date so far, but three runner-up finishes last year on the Japan Tour. He's finished second, so getting another runner-up finish this year at the Indian Open. He's getting closer and closer. Seventh at the Spanish Open last month behind Jon Rahm. It's decent form. And if you look at his last five starts, he's twice produced 12 under par performances on the par fives in his last five starts. So he's hitting, scoring well, playing well on the par fives. And I think overall the price is well worth taking on. 54th currently in the race to Dubai. Top 60 gets through to the Dubai World Championships. So there's going to be a little bit of jostling for position in those final few slots over the next 2 weeks. So a decent week here would absolutely cement his position and allow him to go and book his plane fare for that that final hurrah in Dubai in a couple of weeks' time. But yeah, they're my four. Masahiro Kawamura, Guido Migliozzi, Kyrydek Afibara and Victor Perez.
I know that you're incredibly excited about the Japanese sensation.
I think you'll go well. I do think you'll go well.
Underrated. And you do get that with Japanese players for some reason.
Yeah, underrated and overpriced. So, yes. Anyone else you fancied other than Bobby?
Yes. You mentioned him. The price is it's just about okay for me, but I just think Andre Arnous is going to absolutely love this track.
Yeah.
I'm urinating on your strawberries. It's just the way I'm thinking it. Second at the Kenyan Open. Second at the Alain and the Lithia Masters. So second around Valderrama tells you something that this boy is a cracking golfer.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, his main weapon is his power and approach. Very, very strong off the tee. Second at the Czech Masters. Sixth at the European Masters at Kran. You said about the DP World Tour Championship. You also mentioned definitely the Dunhill links, and I saw those links. I also saw a link to Kran, if you actually look at Dubuisson and also at Koepka, who had two top tens there around Kran. He was sick there this year on Andre. Fourth at the Spanish Open, so two home events this year, second and fourth. Shows that the guy's got some fortitude. Last two events, nothing major. I think he was expected to go well in Portugal. He didn't. But probably just the golf course didn't suit him. It was firm, it was fast. Although saying that, we saw him go very well in very dry conditions in Kenya. But that was a very short course. I just get the feeling, soft golf course, a golf course that's got five par fives, a golf course that is going to be playing soft. I went as simple, Paul. I went to the predictor model. Par five scoring, greens in regulation, and mid-range driving distance, and he was in the top six on the predictor, Andre Arnous. So I just thought 45-1. That, and also, just the way, as I said, fairly well-rested, hasn't had any of this stuff out in Asia. Last time out in Portugal, he had a fortnight off before that, between that and Italian Open. He'll be going there quite fresh, and I just think that, again, looking at what's happened at this tournament in the past, you'd go, oh dear, Andre Arnous has popped up with a big win. He's the kind of player that of that quality. I personally would take him this week over Kitayama, who I think he must be getting close to empty in the fuel tank.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very valid point, the kind of fatigue factor that you're going to get from players. I've been stringing these events together one after the other, and as you said, it's the jet setting as well, isn't it? The change in body clock.
It must annihilate you week after week after week.
I mean, putting the clocks back by an hour just takes its toll on me. Let alone doing what these guys do to their body week in, week out. But
and it's also that maiden tag. You know, that's the angle I'm going on this. And you know, clearly, I think you're struggling to find two better maidens in this event than Kurt Kitayama as Robert McIntyre and Andre Onis. Just looking at Kitayama. He has been in the last. He played Wentworth. He played. He then went to Las Vegas, missed the cut, came back to Italy, then played France, and then last week, he was over in China. Yeah, it's it must take a toll on you. But anyway, you'll probably find he wins, and that'll be the way. We've had a sneaky bet, haven't we, between the two of us? On the Japan Golf Tour event, the Haiwa PGM Championship.
Indeed. Yeah, good spot from yourself, Steve.
What's the name of this chat we've had? I should really know it on the basis I put a bet on him, but they're all very similar, these names.
I think
Yusuke Asahi.
Yeah, I think your logic's good, because if you look through the performances at the back end of last week at the WGC, then... his final round performance was as good as anyone in the field.
Best in the field, with Tyrrell Hatton.
Yeah, 65 he shot on the Sunday. Twice a winner on the Japan Tour already this season.
Yeah.
And he's priced in this Japan Tour field at 125-1.
I
love that bet, Steve. So if that comes in... I'll be buying you a pint or two, I think, on that.
A little tickle each way on Yusuke Asahi. Or Asagi. I don't know if you say the J. But yes, that price looks wrong. I mean, I kept scrolling down. I'm thinking, well, he can't be playing. And then I got to 125-1 and said, yeah, he's playing. So, yeah, I couldn't resist that. You'll probably find he misses the cut. Or I don't know if it's a cut event. Oh, might not be. But yes... He's clearly playing some fantastic golf right now, and if he's a two-time winner on that tour this year, there must be something about the lad.
Yeah, there you go, a bonus Japan Tour tip as well, triple
amazing,
digits.
Amazing stuff, eh? When it all goes horribly wrong. Right, okay, Paul. I appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you. Best of luck this week.
Best of luck to you. Best of luck to listeners. We will be back again, of course, next week for, I believe you've got the Nedbank Challenge in South Africa.
Yep.
And I have got the Mayakoba Classic in Cancun in Mexico. So two decent events next week to get stuck into. Thanks for listening again. If you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, we would greatly appreciate it. Enjoy your betting this week, and we'll be back again next week. Goodbye.